Yes, yes, yes. What's up, my friends? Welcome back to the Pilgrimage Podcast. My name is Joshua Luke Smith, and this is a space for the curious, creative, and contemplative souls. This is a place for you. This is a space to be reminded of that which has always been true. And I can't wait to dig into the episode today. We're continuing a series today called The Kingdom Is Yours. And before we dive in there, I want to let you know about a couple things. ThePilgrimage.co is a website and an Instagram account, and it's a little bit of the internet real estate, this little cul-de-sac on the interweb that I've created and cultivated to be a space for people that are just hungry for more. You know, it's a place where we're having conversations and we're reflecting on what it really means to be here. How can we live lives that are engaged? How can we live lives that are purposeful and lives that serve others? What are some of the spiritual truth and creative ideas that engage our hearts and our minds? And so if you want to be a part of that, if you want to sign up, you can go to pilgrimage.co and you can engage in receiving the resources that come out of that. And by subscribing, you're supporting this podcast. This podcast doesn't have and will never have advertisers or, you know, sponsorship. This is a community funded and supported podcast. It will always be that way. So I appreciate everyone who signed up at thepilgrimage.co. You're incredible. Let's do this, man. Let's keep going on this journey. The kingdom is yours. This is a series that I've called A Manifesto for the Spiritual Life, A Manifesto for the Full Life, A Manifesto for the Life that is Well Lived. And we're going all the way back to some of the earliest teachings by Jesus. And it's a series of teaching that he did that turns the world upside down and really gives us a roadmap for the life that we always dreamt of living. And it's not the life that has been offered to us, you know, by those that market and sell and advertise the good life here and now. It's the life that requires us to let go. It's the life that requires us to give out. It's the life that requires us to see the world through a different lens. And I'm so excited to be digging into this series. So without further ado, this is The Kingdom Is Yours, Part 2. Let's do this. So last week we were looking at this phrase, the kingdom. You know, what does this mean, the kingdom? And we were talking about how the time that Jesus spent on the earth. And as I said last week, if you hear that name, Jesus, and there's something in you that just switches off because it's so heavy laden with connotations and experience and religion and baggage, like I said last week, just stay with us. Just stay in the room, because what we're not doing here is amplifying dogma and religion. What we are doing here is opening up ourselves with curiosity, with genuine, authentic curiosity to explore how to actually be human, which sounds so bizarre because you would say, well, I was born a human, was I not? And the life of Jesus reveals to us there is so much more about being human than we ever realized. You know, you might have heard Jesus is God and Jesus reveals God. Well, Jesus reveals humanity. Jesus reveals the true blueprint of humanity. And so this teaching that he gave, the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, this series of teachings is really all about what it means to be human. And this kingdom that he talked about, this kingdom that he expressed through his words and his through actions, was the evidence of a better way of living. And I talked about this last week, but the kingdom is a bigger picture. The kingdom is a way of living that requires us to see the world bigger than we see it through the lens of our own upbringings and cultural conditioning and spiritual and physical prejudices, and allows us to see with eyes that are innocent right? Eyes that are uncorrupted and distorted through our own pain and past. And the kingdom allows us, it empowers us to be who we've always been. It empowers us to be who we have always been, to live as if that which is truest of us is worthy of being expressed daily. Now, that's so interesting to me. You know, we live these lives that are, you know, these constant expressions of who we are. And so often that which we express about ourselves at the forefront isn't really the evidence of the truest expression of us. And so much of the spiritual life, I talked about this last week, is like Michelangelo with the stone, is cutting away the stone so the statue, you know, Michelangelo's David, so the statue in the stone can be revealed. The statue was always in there. It just needed chiseling away. It just needed the stone to be removed. And the kingdom is the process. Engaging in the kingdom is this process of the stone that's around us being removed so this true and original self can finally be revealed. And Jesus taught this, and he revealed it through his words and through his actions, through his healing, through his restoration of people, and ultimately through his death and his resurrection. And his resurrection was the evidence of everything I said about the kingdom, about this life up until this point. Everything is validated in the accomplishment of overcoming death. Oof. Could it be the case that which we have always hoped to be true is? Could it be the case that you are loved, that you do belong, that you can live for something bigger than yourself, that you don't have to live riddled with anxiety and regret? Could it be true? And this series, The Beatitudes, man, Jesus is just warming up. He's on this mountainside and the people gather around to listen, and he starts speaking out these phrases. And each phrase that he speaks out turns the world upside down, turns the world that the listeners have, you know, come to know as normal upside down. And it's doing the same for me today. I said this last week again, but my life has been changed through these teachings. Like, ultimately, like, the way that I want to live is different from how I eat to what I prioritize. Man, it's different because of these teachings. They're not just lofty spiritual statements. They're tangible, physical ways of changing the way that you live so you can live in this much better way, this much bigger picture. The theologian N.T. Wright says, you know, Jesus birthed this kingdom, but this kingdom is evidenced and it's revealed in the way that we choose to live and how we engage our lives. So the Beatitudes are very much Jesus's manifesto of how to live in the abundance that he talked about. He said, I've come to give you life in abundance. How would you give someone life in abundance? By showing them a whole new way of living. And this is where it's happening. So I'll keep digging into the kingdom throughout this whole series, but ultimately the kingdom is a bigger picture, a more beautiful picture, a better way to live for yourself and for those around you. And it's a life that is eternal. It's a life that overflows this lifetime. It's a life that can't contain the joy and the restoration and the dignity into a mere 80 years, it spills over and it keeps going and going and going. And so the scripture that we've been digging into, Matthew 5, and in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 5, it says, Jesus, seeing the crowds, went to the mountain and he sat down, and then he opened his mouth and he taught them. And the first phrase that he says is this: blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom. The kingdom. The essence of what Jesus came to bring the world, this bigger picture, this better way of living, belongs to the poor in spirit. And we're going to dig into exactly what that means, but I just want to pause for a second, because without knowing your journey, your spiritual experience, your religious upbringing, your tribe, your tradition, I don't know any of that. But before we go any further, I do know that for a long time, the message and the person of Jesus was distorted for me. It wasn't plain to see exactly what he came to do and who he truly was. Because when you fully understand his message, when you fully appreciate what he came to bring, a lost, unruly, fearful humanity, you realize it changes everything. And you can no longer keep the power you once had. And so it works in the favor for those in power who control the systems and the ways that people see the world. It works for them to mute this message, because then they keep the power, you know. And religious traditions and churches have been full of that kind of behavior. And so what we're doing right now, even with Jesus, is we're cutting away the stone to see the statue. Because this is the opening line of his teaching. This is the beginning. This is the first phrase. You know, when a president is inaugurated and they stand and they say their first speech, when a prime minister approaches the podium for the first time, what they say in that moment is so defining. What they begin with is so defining, because it lets the people see what they're really about. What are your first words going to be? How are you going to define the beginning of this, you know, this era? What are you going to say? How are you going to inspire? How are you going to provoke? How are you going to establish what you're here to do? And Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs are the kingdom. Do not get this twisted. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So what does that mean? And how does that impact our life today? Well, it's pretty simple, and yet it's completely uprooting and replanting who we are and what we've known to be true about the world. When Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, he was very much speaking to the people that were listening. And it was so powerful, because the people that were listening, in many respects, were the people he was speaking about. And so it was a message that was so affirming and so empowering in a context where oppression and humiliation was their norm. This word, poor, it's a Greek word, right, that we've translated into the English, poor. Blessed are the poor. And it literally means doubled over, like folded, bent over. It means to be totally crippled. It means to be without. It means to be destitute and broken. And in the day of Jesus, to be at the bottom of the barrel, to be the lowest in society, was to be a picture of that. Someone bent over, bent double, broken, folded by life. Perhaps even physically begging. But perhaps emotionally, perhaps financially, you know, completely destitute, without, empty. And let that word just linger a little longer. Empty. Blessed are the empty in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom. Empty and without. Jesus is speaking to the poor. If you read the Gospels, you realize he spent a lot of time with the poor. He said, like a doctor, I didn't come for the healthy, I came for the sick, you know? And it was so powerful, because even as he said that, and he was speaking to the people that perceived themselves to be healthy because of their stature in society, he was revealing that the sickness isn't defined by status or stature. The sickness is defined by the manner in which we see ourselves and see God and ultimately others. Jesus was constantly turning every idea of what it meant to be successful on its head. And he's saying, I've come for the broken. I've come for the people who have been ostracized, exiled, let go, put on the outside. And so when he said, blessed are the poor in spirit, heads looking down on the ground in shame and in depression would have slowly looked up like, me? Me? Yes. Blessed are those who have learned to live with lack. Blessed are those who have been satisfied with less. You know, I was thinking about this emptiness, right? What does it mean to be empty? And I have negative connotations to that, you know, what it means being empty, because it just speaks to me of lack. And then I started thinking of this phrase, when someone is described of being full of themselves, you know, oh, he's so full of himself. Oh, she's so full of himself. And that is negative, to be full of yourself. And it clicked. It was like this moment of realizing Jesus is saying, blessed are those who are empty of themselves, for theirs is the kingdom. I said last week, you know, when we pray, God, your kingdom come, we're in turn saying, my kingdom go, you know. We're saying, for your kingdom to come, my self-will, my selfishness, my self-righteousness must decrease. My vision of the world, which is defined by my place in it, my success, my domination, you know, my power, that has to now decrease for your kingdom to fully be revealed here. Because so much of what I define about myself to be, you know, good is so often just a description of the stone that's around the statue. And the spiritual life is all about chipping away the stone to get back to the statue. Right at the beginning, Genesis, the beginning of the scriptures, it talks about God created man and woman in his image, and he said, they are good. The first statement of the divine to the human is, you are good, you know? You are good. Just imagine hearing the divine say that about you right now. You are good. You are originally good. And yet over our life, generation upon generation, we're slowly covering the statue in stone of fear, right? Jealousy, comparison, prejudice. And that goodness is still there, but it's further away and it's harder to see. And so when God's kingdom comes, when the kingdom of Jesus comes, there is a understandable, you know, exile of our kingdom. The two can't live in the same place. This kingdom that restores us to this original goodness requires for the outer kingdoms, the kingdoms we build of ourselves, to go and be chipped away. We idolize and we prioritize our self-will. I prioritize what it means to get ahead for myself. I prioritize my road to success and my ladder to achievement. I prioritize that because that's all I've ever known to do. That's all this world has taught me to do. It's natural for me to think of the world in a way in which I need to advance, right? It's natural. And in some respects, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, where there's purity of heart, there's nothing wrong with it. But so often, that achievement-orientated mindset only goes to add more stone upon the statue, you know, only goes to amplify the agendas of my kingdom. And so when Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit, he's saying, blessed are those who have learned to live with lack and to be satisfied with less. Because where you are empty of yourself, you can be filled with the divine. Where you're empty of yourself, you can be filled with goodness, with compassion, with love. Yeah. Blessed are those who through no fault of their own are last and least. Those who in society who are downtrodden and oppressed, blessed are you. Because getting ahead and achieving and accomplishing things in the way most people do has never even been in your thinking. Well, you are blessed. Because just through the circumstance that you're experiencing, you've learned a deep and needed spiritual truth that there is no fulfillment outside of the forgetting of ourselves. There's no fulfillment outside of the forgetting of ourselves. What do I mean by that? To be constantly aware of ourselves, of our desires, you know, and our achievements, and our own needs for recognition. Be constantly aware of these things only makes that void within us greater. Because it keeps setting us up for this false sense of fulfillment. And there's nothing more dissatisfying than going back to the same source over and over and over again to be left with a greater thirst and a greater hunger when you expected to be filled. Now, to forget yourself isn't to become void of your personality. It's to experience true joy. And I know you've experienced it at times where you're suddenly aware that you weren't experiencing any anxiety or insecurity. You ever think back to moments where you think the voices were so quiet, you know? The tremors were non-existent. I was just there in that moment. I was asking questions. I was curious. I was experiencing fully. I wasn't aware of myself. I wasn't anxious about what I was and wasn't doing. I wasn't analyzing my behavior. I wasn't prostituting the moment for what I could get out of it. I was forgetting myself. And this isn't being void of personality, man. This is being full in joy, you know? This is being empty of certain things so we can be full of other things. To be full of joy. And, you know, all spiritual traditions teach us this, but Jesus, more than anyone, joy is so often produced through suffering. Suffering being that which strips us of what has defined us in a way that was never meant to be the case. That which has defined us as anything other than our original stamp of goodness and beauty by God Himself. Joy being the evidence of those that have suffered. Yeah. Jesus was spoken of as going to the cross, enduring the cross, the pain and the torture of the cross for the joy that was before him, for the joy that was on the other side. And you can't forget yourself without suffering, without being stripped of that which you allow to define you other than simply being loved by God, by being defined as good by God, right? And so we suffer when we let someone else go first. We suffer when we choose to forget ourselves. The other day I was driving home and I was trying to like get back as quick as I possibly could. And I had this moment at the junction right by my house, whether to go or let someone go before me. And this phrase came into my mind, which was simply, that person has a destination as important as me. And I thought, you know, that's so true of my life. The times I want to get ahead, the times I want to put myself first, I'm always putting myself before someone who has a destination as valid as mine. And when I choose to go second, when I choose to get there slower, I choose in a respect to suffer and to be stripped of that which has defined me by my own standards, right? Forgetting yourself is not losing your personality. It's experiencing joy. Forgetting yourself is no longer being full of yourself, but emptied. Emptied and therefore able to receive this kingdom. And when you're empty, there's nothing that can be taken from you. You know, our insecurities and our anxieties so often come from the fear of losing something that really, innately, deep down, we don't want to have in the first place. A reputation that we have to upkeep every day, you know? A possession that we have to spend more time thinking about how we're going to protect than enjoying. Our insecurities, our anxieties are so often informed by the fear of something being taken from us. When you're empty, when you've forgotten yourself and you're full in joy, there's nothing that can be stripped of you. The Apostle Paul said it like this. He said, it's no longer I who live, but it's Christ who lives in me. And so the life I live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son who loves me and gave himself for me. He says, you know, I don't live here because of what I've achieved or my accolades. I live in this place of wonder and of freedom because I'm loved. That's how I live here. And man, that defines your work. That defines how you create. Defining where you create from defines what you make. And when you make from a posture that you can't be beaten, you can't lose, you can't be compared, no one else can get wherever you're going before you because you're not even walking that path anyway, you make something that is so everlasting, something that is so defined and drenched with the scent of eternity, you know? And that's true of an artist as much as it's true of the men that come to my house every Monday morning and load up the truck with recycling and bins, because it's all holy work, and whatever we're doing is ultimately defined by how we do it, by where we do it from. And honestly, that defines whether I feel threatened or not. It defines how I respond to people. It defines whether I believe my work matters and how it matters. If I feel threatened, it's not because someone else is intimidating as much as it is I am choosing to be intimidated. I'm choosing to live from a place as if something I have could be taken from me, as if what I have to give the world wasn't a gift in the first place. James, the writer, James said that every good and perfect gift comes from the Father above, the Father of lights, in whom there are no shifting shadows. The best thing I have to give you was a gift already. And so why am I afraid of it being taken from me? Someone needs to hear that who's making something at the moment and is worried that what they have to bring the world could be taken from them, or someone could beat them to it. Bro, it can't be done. It was a gift in the first place, and it will always be a gift that you have to give someone else. The whole system has taught us that we're in competition with one another, and to get ahead has to come at the expense of someone else. Jesus is saying that's not how this kingdom works. In this kingdom, the bent double over, the broken, the poor, those who lack, those the least amongst us, those are the ones this kingdom belongs to. For they have learned to live with joy. They have learned to live with less, and to find themselves content. Yeah, they're full of the good stuff. They're empty of themselves, and so they're full of the good stuff. You know, when you feel insecure, it's so easy to like chastise yourself about being insecure. If a bank that had all this money and gold in it got robbed because it was insecure, right? Then it would be worth looking at the structure of the security to make sure that didn't happen again. So when I feel insecure, I realize, oh, there is something really valuable within me, really worthy within me. So ignoring my insecurities, ignoring our insecurities, devalues that original beauty and goodness within us. Not exploring what makes us feel that way, and how we could live without feeling that way, that anxiety, that insecurity, that chastisement and condemnation of ourselves, not exploring how we could live without that, only devalues the way that we see ourselves. But saying, I don't want to live like that anymore. I don't want an insecurity. I want security. So the original gold that God spoke of to be true about me is protected and enjoyed. And so this whole process, when Jesus is saying, be poor in spirit, he's saying, be aware of what is in you and don't fill your life with an expression that only makes you insecure. Be aware of that original beauty and goodness within you and live in a way that it could never be taken from you. The more your life is based on achievements and accolades, the less you enjoy the original goodness and the truest expression of yourself, because you're constantly having to prove it. And that's why we protect power. And that's why we build systems that are eventually corrupt and oppressive, because we're trying to protect something that never needed protecting in the beginning. How do we know that? Because Jesus is saying the people who never had the ability to protect themselves, who were the most downtrodden and beaten up, they already had it. The kingdom was already theirs. You never needed to preserve this. You never needed to live in such a way that it could be taken from you. There is something in you that is so divine and so pure that it could never, ever have been corrupted or distorted. I don't know what you've been through. I don't know where you've lived. I don't know what's happened to you. But if you live like something was taken away from you, if you live like something ruined you, or perhaps you feel like you've never been good enough in the first place, I'm here to say that Jesus has brought a kingdom that says the opposite. He says, nah, you were always pure and you were always good. And you're on a journey to be constantly reminded and convinced of that truth. In the very beginning, God looked at humanity and said, they are good. They are good. And you don't have to live in a way like something's been taken from you. And you don't have to live in a way like you have to protect something. And honestly, for me, in my life, the two practices that have helped me do this are very simple. Slowing down, letting people go before me, slowing down, not needing to get to my destination before they do. Slowing down, meditating in the morning, slowing down, not getting frustrated just because I'm at the end of the line at the supermarket. Slowing down, walking just to appreciate the steps. And service, serving others, doing something every single week, every day if I can, that puts someone ahead of me. Why? Well, because why not? Because this isn't a system where the first are the first. This is a kingdom where the last are the first. Why are the last first? Because when you put someone ahead of you, you get rid of that which was defining you as something other than who you are. Beloved, worthy, pure, good. The kingdom is yours.